Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5 and 92.5. Brought to you by the generous support of Meyer Bramley Insurance, serving Illinois, Missouri, and Kansas. Meyer Bramley Insurance can be reached online at mbi.agency or via phone at 844-890-2626. Catholic Conversations, where we talk about faith, family, and finance.
We are back, Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5. If you missed our conversation last week with our new favorite priest from Pontiac, I encourage you to go to Podbean or iTunes or CatholicSpiritRadio.com. As always, you can download the podcast and listen back. It was a fantastic interview. We actually went over our hour, so we didn't make it to the gospel, and I think John had to speed us up so we sounded like chipmunks a little bit to squeeze it in, but it was a great conversation. So if you missed it, or if you only heard it once, go back and listen to it again. I'm sure there were some nuggets of wisdom that I dropped in there, or maybe he did.
Oh, I didn't get a chance to listen to it yet.
Oh, Lynn.
I heard that it was really good.
It was fantastic. I didn't have to talk at all. I just sat here.
Oh, that's
he
great.
Did. It was great, wasn't it?
Like Lynn, they have a few of those.
Yeah, Lynn Johnston is with us today. She is the original news voice on this on this station,
God,
right?
This station, yeah.
Yeah, you've been on Catholic Spirit Radio for a while now.
Right, I've been working with the advisory board and stuff since the beginning, almost at least 5 years, maybe longer. I don't know.
At least I've been here for three, I think. So. And if it wasn't for Lynn, I always tell people, Lynn was my RCIA teacher. So if it wasn't
that's
for her.
Been a while ago.
that was more than 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. That was 2009.
Wow.
It's been 10 years.
Can't believe it.
Isn't that crazy?
Mm-hmm.
At Epiphany. So her and Bob were instrumental in my conversion.
Hope so.
I always thank you for that. We have three fantastic guests with us today. Like I said, Lynn Johnston is here. We're going to talk a little bit about some different lay ministry opportunities that all three of these women are involved in. Lynn is with the Secular Order of St. Francis. We also have Judith Valente from the Benedictine Oblates and Mary Catherine Van Deven from the Lay Missionaries of Charity. So all of you ladies, thank you for being with us today.
You're quite welcome.
It tends to be a male-dominated room on my show. It's nice to not have that be the case.
Well, I think that says something about maybe where the church is going.
We definitely have plenty of lay ministry opportunities to talk about. Thank you all three for your service to the church. Who wants to start? Lynn, you want to give us a little bit on the
Sure.
OSF?
Yes, I'm a secular Franciscan, which is used to be the Third Order of St. Francis, and then the Franciscans started out, of course, but with St. Francis. And in 1221, that's a few years ago,
yeah.
A group of, this was right after the rule of St. Francis went into effect with the First Order, which is of the monks, and the Second Order, which was poor clares. And right as that was being gotten together and organized, the secular Franciscans came into being and been chartered in according to canon law in December 21.
See, I pay attention.
Yeah. Well, good for you. I'm starting to lose that ability.
Have you seen the, there's a Poor Clare's stained glass in the chapel at Corpus Christi now, originally St. Clare's school here in town.
Right.
I didn't know anything about St. Clare, and mm-hmm. I saw the stained glass and depicts a...
Poor Clare's started out with, they are a cloistered order, basically, and they work out of their convent. Franciscans have more convents, not monasteries. The Benedictines came, about 400 years before the Franciscans.
Yeah, we're always in the forefront of things, the Benedictines.
Uh-huh.
There's no rivalry here.
Yeah.
No, but they came first. And depended on the Benedictine order to help establish the poor clares, so that the women coming in would get that religious, spiritual background as being a nun.
Gotcha.
Nuns are cloistered.
Gotcha.
Sisters are out in the world.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So, anyway.
So, Judith, how about the Benedictines?
Well, as you said, they were here a they've been here a long time. It's a 1,600-year-old spirituality, and it's as vibrant and alive today as it was in Benedict's time. Why? Because we live in an age very much like the age that St. Benedict started his monasteries. You have you had wealth concentrated among a few. You had a lack of ethics prevailing in politics and commerce. You had political leaders who seemed to represent their own interests more than the interests of the people. And so Benedict wanted to show that there could be another way to live. And he began these communities, these monastic communities. And today, people still follow the rule of St. Benedict, which he originally wrote for people living in monasteries. But there's so many lay people like myself today who are following the precepts of Benedict, which is to stress listening over talking, consensus over conflict, community over competition, and quietude and silence over the constant chatter that infiltrates our lives. And an interesting thing, Jason, is there are now more lay associates. You mentioned oblates. That's just a fancy word. It means offering, but it's a fancy word for what we were talking about, lay associates of the Benedictine order. So there's people like myself who are married, who live in the secular world, work in the secular world, but try to follow those Benedictine principles I just talked about.
Gotcha. I could definitely tell you which group I would not fit into then.
What's that?
The listening over the talking.
Oh,
I don't know that
no,
would
you're,
be...
You have to be a good listener to do
that
what
would
you
not
do, Jason.
Be for, I have had multiple people say, oh, you should go do one of those silent retreats at the White House. And I'm like, no, I don't think so. It's not.
Oh,
that would.
Jason.
I think I would go crazy.
No, I think you'd love it.
I've only been Catholic for 10 years. Maybe after another 10,
well,
I'll be ready to...
To listen?
To listen, yeah.
Well, you must have listened.
See, that's what I always tell... we had a conversation last week with the priest. I said, why doesn't God give me, like, big, you know, poster board-sized signs? Oh. He said, well, maybe you're not listening.
Right.
Silence. Silence,
you know,
is the answer.
After raising 5 children...
Yeah.
There's 5 now, aren't there?
Yes.
You're going to be
They're
glad
They're not raised,
ask.
Though. I wish.
Well,
oh,
no.
You're saying in the future.
Gotcha. In the future, you're going to enjoy that peace.
Oh.
Quiet.
There's never peace and quiet right now.
Well, no. Not supposed to be. You're young.
How about you, Mary Catherine?
Well, I'm a newbie to all this.
Uh-oh.
So I'm just learning myself, but I'll share what I know. As we know, Mother Teresa started her order in 1950. And many people know her story. She's a modern-day saint. Many people have met her. I wish I would have met her, but I just wasn't in Peoria when she came. I wasn't available. But what I know the most is that how our own group got started. And our own group arrived in the Missionary Sisters of Charity arrived in Peoria back in 1982. And that's 27 years ago. So they've been there that long, and Mother Teresa herself, as she would always visit the sisters wherever their convents were, all over the world, she came to Peoria. And the sisters, at the very first time that, very similar to what Mother Teresa herself did when she began, Mother Teresa would go to the houses, the homes, the holes of the people in Calcutta, and find the children, and in the movie it shows that they just came, they just happened to be there. But she would go, once she was more accepted in the neighborhood area, where she went in Calcutta, and start teaching them right outside, you know, on the ground with a stick in the sand, writing in the sand. Well, the Peoria sisters, when they came, they went from house to house, just like she did, looking for young children. And eventually, they did that a little later. I jumped the gun a little bit. When they first went out, they went out on the streets armed with cookies and soda, and they were looking for people on the streets to share food and to get to know them, to introduce themselves to them, so that, that when the time came, then they were started to go into the, when they were accepted, more or less like when Mother Teresa started, then they started to go to the homes and bring the children in a car, one car. They go out and pick up Chum's children, bring them to the school where they the diocese gave them to use. It was a room, actually. And they would go back and forth and back and forth. Finally, as the time went on, they said, this is getting a little too much. Let's get a bus. So the bus helped bring children to the school. And then they ended up saying, this is too expensive. Let's have the parents bring the children. So that's where they are now. They bring the children and pick them up. At the beginnings, they had a soup kitchen. And that's how our own group got started. Because some of the laity in the area came to help with the soup kitchen. And then Betty and Bill Gallivan were the ones who initiated, well, let's get together. Let's form a lay missionary group, missionary of charity group. And that's so that's thanks to them. And they rest in peace. They have both are deceased about a year ago or so. And they passed away. But they were our first. And now we have grown. Thanks to Father Verrier, when he became our chaplain about 12 years ago, he brought more people. And now we're the largest lay missionaries of charity, one of the largest, I should say, in the nation.
Wow.
Of lay missionary charities. We number about 25 at this point, with some are discerning and some are have made their vows.
Gotcha. So do all of the different groups get together for any type of, like, world
yes.
games, like where well, you compete
games,
against
no,
each other to find
games.
Out
the,
if the...
The Oblates usually meet, the Oblates or the Lay Associates yeah. of Benedictines usually meet once a month for prayer. We do the Liturgy of the Hours. Some people call it the Divine Office. We do that together for a particular Sunday. And we come together and we do reading. We read books like my book on the Rule of St. Benedict called How to Live, what the Rule of St. Benedict teaches us about happiness, meaning, and community, and other books, other good books that are written about the Benedictine rule and living it in the world. But you know what's interesting as I hear both of you talk is that we're talking about the priesthood of the laity
right.
here, which was a fulfillment of Vatican II, which is something that the church wanted to happen. And this is what we're talking about here.
Right. Actually, it's a fulfillment of your baptism.
Yeah.
Baptized into the priesthood of Christ. And this really does get us to that point.
And confirmation, too.
Mm-hmm. That's well, can't do the
and it shows that you don't have to live in a monastery necessarily to live these monastic values that I talked about, like listening, humility, hospitality, simplicity. Nor do you necessarily have to join a religious order. Not all are called to that. You know, we have this sense, you know, those people who grew up in the 50s and 60s saw a tremendous influx of people into religious orders and into monastic life. And it always was meant to be for a select few who had that particular calling. But now there are ways to live out that calling in the world that are just as important.
So what separates, well, I guess to your point, what would be... How would someone know who's a longtime Catholic or, you know, in the faith that, hey, I need the next step for me would be to join an order? What would be the trigger there?
Well, I think in my case, it was you get from God, you get a message from, not a, you know, this feeling that you need a little more.
Yeah.
And you come to the point, vocation. You have received a vocation. And it is, joining an order is a vocation in life, another way of living. If with the Benedictine's prayer and work, labor.
Yes, work mm-hmm, and prayer, yeah.
Right. Franciscans are from the gospel to life and from life to the gospel.
And you have to feed the squirrels, right?
That's right. Yeah. How would they survive?
Yeah, somebody has to feed them.
Mm-hmm.
And so if someone feels that call, to join a religious order, then how did you guys pick the ones that you're in? Or did they pick you? Or
well, I think you have a certain yearning for something in your heart. And that yearning is placed there by God, by the Spirit. In my case, I write poetry. I have two books of poems. I was drawn to the contemplative aspect of the Benedictine life. They're a contemplative order. They also teach, but there's this, it's centered on prayer and contemplation. And that appealed to me. I also, my profession has been a journalist most of my life. And that's a very, as you know, very hectic, fast-paced, fast-changing way of life. And I needed something that grounded me. And I found that I got that through the Benedictines, particularly the fact that they have, you know, they have such a wonderful prayer life, such a tradition of the liturgy of the hours, you know, praying morning, afternoon, and evening. And that was really attractive to me.
I felt the same contemplative deepening in my life, even as a young child. I loved to go to church. I loved to stay in church and pray and listen and just get to know Jesus and fall in love with him.
Yeah.
And as time grew on, now in my new life, I'm a new widow, and I have more time. And I had, when I saw in the Catholic Post, I have to put a plug for the Catholic Post, that the lay missionaries of charity in Peoria were having an Advent retreat. And I thought, that sounds interesting. So I thought, I'm going to go find out, because they invited everybody to come. So I went, and I just loved it. I loved the people, the prayer, the spiritual director. He really knew how to bring us close to Jesus, like Mother Teresa did with her sisters. And it was just something that fit. I just felt it just was right. And later on, I was discerning what I could do in it, but we'll talk about that later.
Absolutely.
Right. We're getting close, so maybe when you take a break?
Yeah, we can get there.
Okay. I say maybe after break we can talk about what it means to be in the world,
right?
The secular and the
how
religious.
Do we actually live it out in the world?
Yeah. See, I don't even have to give a teaser. Lynn, you're on it.
It's well,
I don't know. I keep wondering when you're just going to break away and have your own show.
We used to.
We could have a third show of the weekend.
Oh, my.
It could be Jason sandwiched between two Johnstons.
Okay.
We'll take a quick break. You're listening to Catholic Conversations on 89.5 with Jason Bramley and our three fantastic guests today. We will be back shortly, and we will cover exactly what Lynn said in our wonderful teaser.
Right.
We'll be back after
this. See you
then. You're listening to Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5 and 92.5.
When your hands are full and you can't reach the radio dial, say,
Alexa, play Catholic Spirit Radio.
When you're relaxing after a busy day and need inspiration, say,
Alexa, play Catholic Spirit Radio.
When you can't remember the radio station's frequencies, say,
Alexa, play Catholic Spirit Radio.
It's easy to listen to Catholic Spirit Radio on 89.5 or 92.5 FM. And now you can listen on Alexa. Just say,
Alexa, play Catholic Spirit Radio.
Catholic Spirit Radio from TuneIn.
We are back, Catholic Conversations, with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio, 89.5, 92.5, and what's the new one?
88.3.
I'm going to lose my job today.
No, you aren't.
I think Mary Catherine is applying for it. She's trying out for it.
All right. So we have three fantastic guests with us today. Mary Catherine Van Deveren is here with Lay Missionaries of Charity. Judith Valente, the Benedictine Oblates, and your three. What time are you on? 4 o'clock on Sunday.
4 o'clock.
Lynn Johnston, being Catholic, with her and her husband Bob. To talk about the Secular Order of St. Francis. So are these groups for men and women, or are they just for the ladies, or how's that work?
Both. Oh, it's not for the ladies. It's for the general
right, everyone.
Catholics.
Gotcha.
That are married.
Open to everybody.
It's open to everybody.
Okay.
You just have to be in the Franciscan order, because we do live in under the canonical laws of the church. You have to be a Catholic, a Roman Catholic, and have received your sacraments of initiation.
Perfect.
Well, that's different from the Benedictines.
Yes.
Because
oh, really?
There's a lot of Protestants in who are Benedictine oblates, which I think is really good because we learn from people of other faiths. And in fact, Kathleen Norris, who's a best-selling author, wrote The Cloister Walk about her time at a Benedictine monastery, St. John's Abbey in Minnesota. You know, best-selling book. She's a Protestant. She's a Presbyterian. But she's a tremendous advocate for Benedictine values.
I've read that book. It was one of the first things that made me search for.
Right. So sometimes it's good to have people from outside your faith kind of being a part of it because they bring something that maybe we don't see as Catholics.
I would find that very interesting. We need to talk to Anne about getting a Protestant on the radio that is a member of a mostly Catholic organization. I would find that to be a very interesting. Because to me, as a convert, I've always said that like Catholicism is the logical conclusion to faith. So for somebody that would be immersed in Catholic faith but continue to be Protestant, I would find that to be very interesting. Just kind of how that.
What we're talking about here is a spirituality that maybe transcends Catholicism. You know, we're talking about a spirituality really of the heart with Francis, with Mother Teresa. I mean, Mother Teresa had many admirers. Mary Catherine, you could speak to this. Many admirers and followers who were not necessarily Catholic.
No. When they went out to do their ministry, we are not here for any specific religion. We are here for you, for a person. They didn't even look at religions. That's how they got accepted where they were.
What do you think, St. Francis?
Well, that's all very true. You know, we are, our hearts are with God, and that's where it should be. Franciscans follow the magisterium of the church and are supposed to be loyal to it. We make a public profession and are consecrated. We are not bound by public vows as a religious living in a community are, but otherwise we are. The Third Order Regular, which grew out of the Third Order Secular, do make religious vows and they live in community. And when you make a religious sacred vow, you don't break it.
True.
You have to go to Rome.
Yeah. Or you go somewhere else.
Right.
Interestingly enough, I think the Catholics who become Benedictine oblates will say that their Catholicism becomes deeper. And probably the Protestants who become Benedictine oblates say their Presbyterianism or their Methodism, or their Church of Christism becomes deeper.
Yeah. I guess this probably won't make me many friends. But I think that, to me, I think that one of the things that I struggle with as a new Catholic, newer, is that I think if we truly believed what we said, then we would evangelize more. We would want to have those conversations. I guess to me, like my mom is a mega churcher. I think we had, I was in RCIA, told you that. I don't think where she's at is a good place for her to be because I truly believe in Catholicism and the Catholic Church and the Eucharist and all of those things. So for me as a Catholic, I want her to have that fullness of the faith. And I think so many times in order to, I don't know if we just don't want to step on toes or we don't want to, offend someone else, we say, well, it's that ecumenicism.
But Jason, how best does one evangelize? St. Francis himself is supposedly said, preach the gospel always.
They said that he never said that.
Use words if necessary.
You evangelize
by your life.
Right.
Well, I agree, but I also think that we're not doing any justice to people by allowing them to continue to be where they're at and not challenging them to continue to move forward. I agree with the love the sinner but hate the sin, but we're not loving the sinner by not telling them if they're wallowing in sin either.
But you get to get their attention.
Well, true.
and to get their attention. What draws people to religion, to the belief? It's the behavior of the person who will later teach it. That's what you first see.
You know, words are easy, but to really live this stuff is hard. And if people see you being hospitable, they see the lay missionaries going out and working with the children, they see the secular Franciscans, you know, working with the people, that's what's going to stay with them, not the fact that you challenge them about something.
Well, I think it's going to stay with them, but I'm not sure that it's going to bring them into the church. I think that I had a conversation with one of my best friends this weekend. He's in his mid to late 50s, retired police officer. Now he works at that giant building down the street. And he's from Western Kansas, born and raised Catholic. His wife is born and raised Catholic. And the last time they went to church is when my son was baptized, who's six now. And they only came because I was like, hey, dude, why don't you come? And he said to me, you know, I think that what doesn't draw me to the church anymore is the fact that I don't feel like the church stands for anything anymore. Oh. There's no...
you've got three people here who will tell you the church stands for a lot. You know, we just named a lot of the things that the church
I'm not
stands
saying
for.
That the three of you don't stand for anything, but I think that there's definitely huge questions about what does the church stand for right now. I think the church for the last... And again, in just 9 years of being Catholic, I don't remember altar rails and receiving the Eucharist on the tongue and all of those types of things. But I don't think that the church did itself justice by getting rid of all that and becoming a watered down version of where it used to be.
Well, you know, you're acting like that was the norm from all time. You know, I mean. When Saint Benedict was writing and establishing monasteries, there hadn't been the Reformation yet. So all of this predates the Reformation.
Sure.
So that's why Protestants are interested in it, because it's about a time when we were all one and we can all be one again.
But I don't think we'll ever be one if we don't have those conversations about, hey, my faith experience is better than yours.
But you're acting as though taking communion on the tongue was, you know, somehow, you know, instituted by Christ. I mean, these were things that came afterwards that were thought up. And really, they don't have anything to do with the heart of the faith, whether you take the communion on the hand or on the tongue. It's not,
well,
it's not the heart of the faith.
But I think it's a belief.
Disagree with you.
I think it's a belief in whether or not that's truly the body
is,
of Christ.
The important thing is, do you believe it's the real presence of Christ?
And all I'm saying is that I think that the church has allowed people to no longer truly believe it by taking the reverence from...
Do you think people who take communion on the hand are not as reverent as people who take communion on the tongue?
Yes.
Well, that's a big judgment.
That is
a big judgment you're making on a lot of Catholics.
Well, I'm not saying that they're not. I mean, I'm not saying that just because you take communion in the hand is less, it makes you less reverent. What I'm saying is that the idea of whether or not it's acceptable makes it less reverent from the church's standpoint. I'm not throwing one person under the bus.
I agree with you, but why wouldn't I? I taught them.
Good job.
It's being very judgmental, though.
But
we're called to judge.
There is a mystical side of the church, which is very important. And it's one of those things that people coming into the church from the Protestant background are looking for. And the young that are coming in, teaching RCIA and stuff, I see, they're grasping for this.
As long as
internal nourishment.
As long as they understand what's the significance, that it is the real presence. It's not the fact that your tongue is sticking out that makes it the real presence. It's the real presence.
It's the belief, too. You know, they believe it's a real presence.
But the real presence is us in action. That's we have
true.
To do Jesus in action. And then Jesus, that's God's work to bring them into the church. We bring them to Jesus.
Right. I am in no way downplaying the orders. I think that this is the choir arguing in the choir loft, as far as I'm concerned, what's the best way. I definitely think that... you know, everyone should be called to a higher vocation, and you know, we should have our you know, monasteries and our seminaries and our whatever else bursting at the seams. And so again, just back to my point, was that I think that when we don't believe enough to have difficult conversations with people who disagree with us, then we truly aren't believing. That's all. That was my only
point. But if you want to have a conversation about whether it's the real presence or not in the Eucharist, that's a valid conversation. But the trappings of whether you take communion on the tongue or in the hand, whether a nun wears a veil or not a veil. I mean, how many of these sisters are, you know, so many sisters I meet are walking saints.
Yeah, but it is 100%
reflective. They don't need the veil to know that they're saintly.
If
they are separated from the world, though.
It's a show of going.
Does the veil separate them from the world, or does their actions? It's their actions that show that they're separated.
But they
from the
are
world.
Not identified as well.
And also,
I think we lost something there when we lost the habit.
Well, look what happened with Mother Teresa. She put on the dress of the people, and that's how she got accepted. Now we see that as a habit,
right?
And we see her, you know. But with the people, whether they're in America or in India or wherever, they know who they stand for. But they also know inside who the people are that need Jesus.
Would Mother Teresa have been any less of a saint if she were not wearing the veil? Would that have detracted from everything that she accomplished?
She made a statement with wearing it.
I agree.
But to her, it wasn't a habit. It was the dress of the people. That's what I'm saying. It became a habit.
And as with where the old habit originated.
Right. The habit
it was
originated.
The dress
It was the dress
of the
people. And the dress of the people today is not that habit.
Well, even nuns wear
it. Well, of the dress of the world. But
right.
Mother.
But they are out of, you know, it should be, take yourself away from the world as much as you can, but still be a part of it.
Yeah.
That's what St. Francis taught, because he, you know, secularism is a term today when you use it. Yes, it has very bad connotations.
Yeah.
But in the beginning, it was just, in a religious sense, it was just the definition of somebody that has spiritually removed themselves from the world and turned themselves over to God and then are functioning in the world, which may be a little bit harder than being in a convent.
And that's what I was just going to say.
Except that's not easy either.
For lay
people. You've got to get along with people in the convent.
Yeah, that's true. For lay people, I think as lay people, we're called to an extremely difficult vocation. Not that being a priest or a sister is easy, but I definitely think that a lot of times it would be easier to be a monk that lives in a cave in the desert. You know, and not have some of those material. We all choose a different path.
It's not that easy.
I'm not saying. I'm just saying that, you know, a lot of times we don't relate to other people's struggles like we should. And so that's all I'm saying is that as lay people, I think, you know, we should recognize that, you know, we're called to great struggle just through the trying to be in the world but not of the world.
That's
a very difficult thing. Mm-hmm. You know, for anybody.
Yeah. Where do we start?
Right.
Someone asked that to Mother Teresa. Look at all the needs that are out there. Where do I begin? She said, you begin with the person in front of you. And that's the family.
Yeah.
That's what we should be talking about is the family.
Yeah.
How do we get in our own families, bring them to close to God together?
And Mary knows how to get away from the world. Mary takes her own retreat.
Oh.
She's done this for years on her bicycle.
Oh, yeah?
You're
goes a cyclist,
across
huh?
the state of Wisconsin.
Oh, wow.
Bike trails. And I used to be the country roads, too, and the hills.
Not this time of year, though, I would assume.
No, summer.
Hopefully that's coming soon.
Yeah. But we all need that. We all need to get away, and we need to bring our family. This morning, I was so excited when I heard the gospel, when Jesus cured the man with all the devils and the swine went into the over the hill and into the sea, whatever. And he said, I want to follow you after he was cured. And he said, I want to follow you. And Jesus said to him, go home and tell your family all that has happened, all that the Lord has done for you. And that's our calling, all of our callings. We have to go home and be with our family. They're the first ones we forget about.
Yeah.
We see them all the time. We don't think about what their needs are.
Yeah.
And we just go our merry way. Yeah. But we But this lay missionary of charity experience for me, even though my family isn't living in my house anymore because I'm alone, they're there, and their needs are very important to me, and I pray for them all the time, and I try to, you know, keep in touch, and what are you doing? How are things? You know, but luckily I have a beautiful family that they're learning together to pray and bring their children to pray with them, and, you know, just to be aware of the Lord in their lives.
Awesome.
But that's not happening everywhere.
Yeah.
We need that
to
spread out. And that's what we as lay missionaries need to be doing in our
right.
work.
We've got to fight this secular
push
lifestyle.
Yeah.
This.
Well, maybe we could talk a little bit about what you actually do as a Franciscan.
Yeah, we didn't get to that.
We didn't get to that.
No. We didn't get to that.
Oh, we've got a lot to cover.
Time
yet.
For another break.
Yes.
So we'll take a quick break. You're listening to Catholic Conversations on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5. When we get back, we will talk about what all of these missionaries do on a day-to-day basis.
You're listening to Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5 and 92.5.
When your hands are full and you can't reach the radio dial, say,
Alexa, play Catholic Spirit Radio.
When you're relaxing after a busy day and need inspiration, say,
Alexa, play Catholic Spirit Radio.
When you can't remember the radio station's frequencies, say,
Alexa, play Catholic Spirit Radio.
It's easy to listen to Catholic Spirit Radio on 89.5 or 92.5 FM. And now you can listen on Alexa. Just say,
Alexa, play Catholic Spirit Radio.
Catholic Spirit Radio from TuneIn.
We are back. Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5. If you're just tuning in, I would say you've missed a great conversation. So go to iTunes or Podbean or CatholicSpiritRadio.com and listen to the podcast. We have three fantastic guests with us today. Judith Valente from the Benedictine Oblates. Of course, Lynn Johnston from the Secular Order of Franciscans. And Mary Van Deven, Mary Catherine Van Deven from the Lay Missionaries of Charity. Mary Catherine, we'll start with you. What? How does this impact, or how does this live out in your daily life? Being a,
I'm very busy with the sisters.
Yeah,
they have many needs. They have many many ministries right now going on. When I first mentioned they had, I don't even know, think I mentioned they had a soup kitchen. They were just gathering children. That the soup kitchen that they had was turned over to a Sacred Heart Parish in Peoria. But now, because I live out here in Normal, and they're in Peoria, and it was no problem at all for me to drive back and forth, and they know that. So whenever they need a ride, Mary. And so, but I'm thrilled to do it because I believe in what they do, and I love what they do, and I'm so happy I'm a part of it. They are now, and I'm doing a lot of this too with them. They go into homes, and that I haven't done that yet, but other lay missionaries have. They visit the homes, even of the children that come to the school, the CCD program. They go into apartments and deal with the poor there. They go into nursing homes, and I did that for the first time, and I brought my guitar. And
well, they do enjoy that.
It was amazing. Just see the distressing faces of the poor. You know, they're just hungry for somebody to come and share and be there and just sit down with them and listen and talk to them and pray with them, and that's what we did. They prayed the rosary and others, and Jesus saw, you know, the hunger in faces, and he fed them, and that's what the sisters do, and that's what we are trying to do. And they went to the individual homes. And then if their car breaks down, then there's myself and other people help drive them places, doctor's offices or different things, different ministries where they can't get to.
And you said you guys have a retreat coming up?
Oh, yes. We have a national retreat coming up at the end of March. And it's our wonderful co-founder, which I forgot to mention at the beginning, Father Sebastian from India. He will be there as the main speaker. And we get letters from him. He and Sister Mother Teresa were so close, and they were co-founders of this wonderful movement. Let's see, I had my information right here. It's going to be at Our Lady of Snows. A shrine
oh, yeah.
in Belleville. And that's a so beautiful
close
place.
By.
And I didn't realize they had a shrine hotel.
Yeah.
So we could stay right
and
there.
And they just built a Hofbrau house right across the street. So if you like
wonderful.
German pretzels
ooh,
and
that sounds even more inviting.
Schnitzels and giant beer mugs.
Yeah, really. Well, that sounds good.
And so if people want to get more information, where should they go? Is there a website? Or?
Well, the main website is MotherTeresa.org.
Okay.
And there's a lot of information there. But there is an information about our group. People interested in our group, our link, and she said I can give you her phone number. My link is Linda Nichols, and her phone number is 217-260-4599. She's in charge of our group and all the new people coming in. We meet at the Peoria Curcio Center at 401 Northeast Madison Avenue in Peoria. It's near Monroe and Spalding. It's near the
Spalding Center.
The Spalding Center, but it's the old building. It's not the new building.
Gotcha.
So that, and we meet once a month as a group, and the formation people like me will meet. That's the second Tuesday is the large group with wonderful spiritual things that we do together, including reading a book or the statutes. So then we pray, we have mass, we have confession, and it's just a way to get closer to Jesus for all of us together.
Yeah.
And that's what I just felt crazy glued to these people and to everything Mother Teresa believes in and teaches and the sisters to see them in action. Oh my goodness. It was like being with Jesus, walking through that nursing home with them and the sisters praying with them. Mary, come with me. We went into the rooms, individual rooms.
Awesome.
And just brought the love of Jesus to them. And,
awesome.
And that comes right back to us.
Yeah, absolutely. How about you, Judith? You said that, I know you said you guys have a monthly meeting and you pray the divine office. And how else does your call?
Well, as St. Paul says, we all have different gifts and we all have different ministries. So some people work in the prisons. Some people work at the food pantry at Holy Trinity, a variety of ministries as Mary Catherine was saying for the associates of Mother Teresa. However, I think with Benedictines, it's kind of a way of life. It's integral to your own way of life. And there's certain lines from the Rule of Saint Benedict that really stand out that should guide our lives if we're going to be Benedictine oblates. And one of them is be the first to show respect to the other, bearing with the greatest patience one another's weaknesses of body and behavior. That's a line from the Rule. And you know, that whole thing about be the first to show respect to the other. Hospitality is a tremendous Benedictine value. So you see, you know, you just when I meet a Benedictine oblate, I mean, there's just this tremendous sense of hospitality that you get and warmth that you get them about putting the needs of someone else before your own. And another great line from the Rule that means a lot to me is, day by day, remind yourself you are going to die. Hour by hour, keep watch over everything you do. And often that's a guiding point. That's a guiding light for my life. You know, am I going to regret having done this on my deathbed? Did I really need to get angry over this? Did I really need to say that? You know, and so some of these things from the Rule, they just become a part of your daily life in addition to the ministries that people do.
Sure. Awesome.
Before, can I jump in?
Sure.
I meant to mention that our main ministry is our family, that a lot of the lay ministers, missionaries of charity are not able to go out and do these things in their neighborhood or come with the sisters. They don't necessarily live in Peoria and they're right there. They start with their family, they start with their parish family. And that's so important. And then the new people that are interested, we have a come and see. And I think most of us do.
Yes.
Come and see if this is for you, and then you can, you know, join if you decide.
Gotcha.
I mean, if people want to know how to become a Benedictine oblate, they could go to my website, www.judithvalente.com, and leave me a message, and I'll get back to them with all the information.
Awesome. How about you, St. Francis?
Oh, St. Francis, well, we've been around in every place in the secular world that you can think of. We're We have ministries in education. Hospitals are big. We have within our small fraternity, in our fraternity, which there are about 60 members, mm-hmm. and we meet monthly at St. Mary's Parish in Bloomington, and the meetings are open to anybody that would like to come and inquire. 3 p.m., the third Sunday of the month, we're at St. Mary's in Bloomington. So if you think you would be interested in coming, you can call Linda Scooby or go online to the secularfranciscans.com.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate you guys coming. I don't remember. Did John tell you we're going to arm wrestle to see which vocation's the best?
No, he didn't.
No?
They're all interrelated.
They're all the best.
Right. And I'm not sure about, Mary, about your order, but I know the Benedictines and the Franciscans, too. You have to go through a period of time.
Yes, we do that, too.
A cooling off period.
Well, it's,
no, it's called formation.
Formation.
Ours is 2 years. Is
it, oh, wow.
Ours is three.
Ours is about, wow. It's 2 or 3 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You better
so
really
that you're
be,
formed yeah. into the process, more or less.
Yeah, and make sure you know all of the what you're agreeing to and make sure it's transferred onto your
to
life
yourself,
and your attitude.
Right.
And absolutely.
Have to be formed in the image of Christ.
We have just a few minutes to get to our gospel reading. Would you guys like to stay and give us a reflection on the gospel?
Sure.
Awesome. All right. This week is from Luke chapter 5. While the crowd was pressing in on Jesus and listening to the word of God, he was standing by the lake Gennesaret. He saw two boats there alongside the lake. The fishermen had disembarked and were washing their nets. Getting into one of the boats, the one belonging to Simon, he asked him to put out a short distance from the shore. Then he sat down and taught the crowds from the boat. After he had finished speaking, he said to Simon, "Put out into deep water and lower your nets for a catch." Simon said in reply, "Master, we have worked hard all night and have caught nothing, but at your command I will lower the nets." When they had done this, they caught a great number of fish, and their nets were tearing. They signaled to their partners in the other boat to come to help them. They came and filled both boats, so that the boats were in danger of sinking. When Simon Peter saw this, he fell at the knees of Jesus and said, "Depart from me, Lord, for I am a sinful man." For astonishment at the catch of fish they had made seized him and all those with him, and likewise James and John, the sons of Zebedee, who were partners of Simon. Jesus said to Simon, "Do not be afraid. From now on you will be catching men." When they brought their boats to the shore, they left everything and followed him. The Gospel according to Luke.
Praise to you, Lord Jesus Christ.
So much there.
Absolutely. What do you think, Judith? Well, you want to kick us off?
I love that Jesus is right there with the people teaching, is what we've been talking about today, the missionaries of Mother Teresa being right there with the people. And then the fact that, to me, it's almost metaphoric that we're going to go through some dry periods in our spiritual life where we're not catching anything. And I think Jesus is saying, do not be afraid of those periods. We're all going to go through some dark periods in our spiritual journey, but to keep going, that there's, you know, the Lord is with you. Keep going. Be not afraid of those dark periods because they are leading us to something else.
Yeah, absolutely. Mary Catherine?
Well, what I was thinking was he was catching fish. He was helping the apostles catch fish. That's because not only for their livelihood, but because they're hungry. They were going to feed the people. So Jesus saw the hunger in their faces, and he fed them, and then he taught them. So he knew that if they are fed, just like Mother Teresa, which you see the poorest of the poor, and she could see the hunger in their faces, and she fed them with her love and the love of Jesus and the Blessed Mother. And that's what brought them to Jesus. And the do not be afraid, when we think of all that Mother Teresa went through, my goodness, and her dark night that she had to survive, and all of us, we go through these things, and we need Jesus in our boat. And he says, do not be afraid, you know, just trust in me. And that's what that spoke to me.
What spoke to me was, do not be afraid. You know, you venture out into life. and in this world, you cannot be afraid. You need Jesus there with you to go out and to preach. And you're looking, as Mary said, at the hunger in people. And the hunger is great. You can see it. They want it. And going to, like you were saying earlier in the program, you have to reach out to people. And we need to be doing more of that. What did he do first? He went and worked with the people. They could see in him there's something different. And there was Jesus right there with them. And he wasn't afraid. But we need Jesus, so we aren't afraid. You know, we're in a different, we're much different than God.
Yeah.
We're human.
I think the part that that spoke to me was when Simon Peter said, "Depart from me, Lord, for I am a sinful man." And I think that Simon recognized that that he was unworthy as a sinner to be in the presence of God. And I think that a lot of times we or at least myself have started to feel like you know, God is all merciful, and so therefore he owes me mercy. And I think that that's a, you know, a dangerous thing. I think we need to remember that God also stands for justice, and as a sinner, you know, I'm as worthy of his justice as I am worthy of his mercy. And so I think we're called, you know, obviously as sinners to acknowledge our sin and to repent, and then, you know, to try to pick up our cross and continue to follow Christ. So
how beautiful the gospel is.
It speaks to all of us.
Yes, it does, in every way. And each time you read them, you get a little different.
That's right. That is true. I so appreciate you guys being here with us today. I would encourage everyone to pray this week and to spend, or in the coming weeks, and spend some time in silent reflection, something that I could always learn to do more of, to see if God is calling you to a vocation of any one of these groups or orders, or there's other ones out there. You can definitely check them out. But if you have more questions, you know, definitely go back and you can listen to our podcast and get the information on where to get more information on these specific groups, whether it be the Lay Missionaries of Charity, the Benedictine Oblates, or the Secular Order of St. Francis. So I appreciate all three of you being with us.
Thank you, Jason.
Absolutely. Who was shocked at the rigged game yesterday? Anybody? Anybody?
I just
watched
Patriots fans here.
The last 3 minutes.
Well, that's the only time anybody scored. So, I mean, you didn't miss anything.
No. All right. I'm certainly not into that.
Yeah.
Baseball's quite another thing.
Baseball's
yes,
my
it's
game. Base, too. Yeah.
It is time.
Yeah.
It is time to get on to the baseball season, isn't it?
Right.
April is almost here. So
February, spring training.
It feels like April outside today.
That's right.
So hopefully it'll be getting closer. All right. Well, we thank everybody for being here. We thank you for listening. You've been listening to Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5. This is Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley.
You've been listening to Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5 and 92.5. Brought to you by the generous support of Meyer Bramley Insurance, serving Illinois, Missouri, and Kansas. Meyer Bramley Insurance can be reached online at mbi.agency or via phone at 844-890-2626. Catholic Conversations, where we talk about faith, family, and finance. Download our podcasts at CatholicSpiritRadio.com.
Can I ask you a question? Are you encountering adversity in your life? Are you carrying a heavy cross? Is your cross a serious illness? A broken relationship? The loss of a loved one? Financial, mental, emotional, physical, spiritual? Yes, crosses come in many forms, and crosses are difficult. They can be very heavy. They can be overwhelming. Is your cross crushing you? Do you feel at times like you cannot even breathe? Well, I know may know a little bit about the cross, and I want to assure you that our Lord Jesus is with you and he knows everything about your cross. As a matter of fact, he went before you when he hung and bled and died on the cross for you. Well, the world is being redeemed through the cross. As difficult and painful as our crosses may be, it is a great privilege to be given the gift of the cross in our lives. Listen, there is one thing we will not have in heaven, and that if it's possible to have nostalgia in heaven, we will have nostalgia for this, and that is the redemptive and purifying crosses we were blessed with during our lives. Yes, the cross is literally joined to God. Jesus, God and man, allowed himself to be nailed to the cross. And if we want to be one with Jesus here on earth, we need to allow him to pull us up on the cross with him. Because in a real sense, that is where he is at, and that is where we will find him. We can only really see the world for what it is through the view from up on the cross. It is there that we learn to love everything and everyone from the cross, because God is love and he is one with the cross. Yes, Jesus died once, rose, and is seated at the right hand of the Father in heaven, but he is mystically still on the cross, redeeming the world through his mystical body, the church, and that is you, and that is me. And don't forget that the cross leads to the resurrection. I'm Jim Littleton, FormingFaithfulFamilies.com.
Hello, friends, and welcome to The Crux of the Matter. I'm Father Wade Menezes of the Fathers of Mercy. In Catholic theology, the one priesthood of Jesus Christ is participated in through two ways: the baptismal priesthood, also referred to as the common priesthood of all the faithful, and the ministerial priesthood, also called the hierarchical priesthood. Unfortunately, however, these two distinct participations in Christ's one priesthood often become convoluted, for example, at the parish level, with regard to duties strictly intended for the priest and those strictly intended for the laity. This can lead to that phenomena referred to often as the clericalization of the laity and the laicization of the clergy. But based solidly on scripture, tradition, and the magisterium, church teaching on this topic is clear. The Catechism of the Catholic Church, number 1547, states, "The ministerial or hierarchical priesthood of bishops and priests and the common priesthood of all the faithful participate each in its own proper way in the one priesthood of Christ. While being ordered one to another, they do differ essentially. While the common priesthood of the faithful is exercised by the unfolding of baptismal grace, the ministerial priesthood is at the service of the common priesthood." As Catholics, then, we hold that the ministerial priesthood, through the power of the laying on of hands from a direct descendant of the apostles, is a means by which Christ unceasingly builds up and leads his church in its common priesthood of all the faithful. This is why the ministerial priesthood has its own sacrament, the sacrament of holy orders. And through the sacraments of baptism and confirmation, the faithful exercise their common priesthood, each according to his own vocation, through their participation in Christ's own mission as priest, prophet, and king. And that's the crux of the matter. I'm Father Wade Menezes. Thanks for joining us here at EWTN.